Broadcasting from a device built by a teenage genius using leftover parts from an erector set. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this edition of The Echo Chamber. Jason Hunt here. Thanks very much for listening here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Joining me in The Echo Chamber today, dialing in by Google Hangout, Mr. Dan Handley, our science correspondent.
Hello.
And here in the studio, our intern, Allie. Wait. No, we can't
Allie
say
Allie the intern.
Allie the intern. Intern Allie sounds like that's where they all go to die.
Allie the intern, like Allie a superhero intern. Name.
Yes. Yes. As opposed to Allie the sidekick. It's not quite as powerful.
Of course, that back alley for interns where they all go to fight.
Yes, that's right. Let them fight.
The intern club.
Yes. Allie the intern joins us here. Allie Ulrich. And Christopher Jensen, who is one of our graphics and behind-the-scenes people there at Week in Review.
Greetings.
And our new co-host of the new show, Sci-Fi XY, Sonia Rodriguez, is here. All the way from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Yes.
Yes. Heck of a trip to make just to record a podcast, isn't it?
Yes.
But you know, there's pie. Okay, so, and coffee. We must have our coffee, and we're still looking for a coffee sponsor. I'll just throw that out there. The topic for the hour, Hollywood is dead. Dan suggested this a while back. The idea here, and we've certainly seen this with some of the different topics that we've covered, things that we've talked about here on various shows, this idea that we are so bogged down in the quagmire of remakes and reboots, and everything is a recycling of something else. And you look at the box office numbers for something like Tomorrowland, and it's a very legitimate question. Is Hollywood done being creative? Is creativity dead in Hollywood? So talk amongst yourselves. No big whoop. Discuss.
I think that there's definitely a cyclical sense within the creativity in Hollywood. I mean, if you look back even 15 years ago, this discussion was being said again when movies started in Hollywood gaining a lot more sequels, or even, you know, becoming in that brief term where they called them prequels.
Yeah.
You know, it just kept rolling over, and people, oh, Hollywood's dead, it can't tell an original story.
It all became about the franchise.
Right, the franchise, yeah. And now we've shifted into the idea of the shared universe. I think it's all just that context. I mean, I think there are original ideas out there. I was kind of browsing around this weekend and looking at different things, and I think the larger pictures tend to dwarf and make the others disappear. I saw a very original trailer for a film, kind of a sci-fi horror film called Infinity. Came out in May of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see a single trailer anywhere for it until after it came out. It's now on VOD, but it looks amazing. You know, and I found out through research that it's based on, or that it's directed by, a guy who did one called Gabriel back in 2007, who scraped together like $250,000 in Australia and made this Archangel kind of like epic story, which is fantastic. And so the originality is there, but it's definitely not in Hollywood.
Well, perhaps saying that creativity is dead might not be the way to look at it. But
that was your suggestion.
They're not willing to take risks. The executives aren't willing to take the risks with the new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. Because, I mean, it's not even just in Hollywood, and it's not even just in genre. Because, I mean, if we look at Hollywood in genre, they just announced that they're going to reboot Kindergarten Cop.
Hmm.
Of all things, you know.
Because it's not a tumor.
but exactly. But, I mean, you go into, like, television, they're going to be rebooting Battlestar Galactica again. You look at Broadway, who are they pulling from? They're pulling from Hollywood and television, and they're rebooting the old shows.
Mm-hmm.
What you're looking at is
Back to the Future is even getting a musical.
Exactly.
I'd say that would be a little bit different. That would be a reinterpretation, because it's a completely different medium than just making it as a remake. You know, another version of the movie. And I think that's one of the things that intrigues me about Terminator Genisys, is that it's kind of a reboot, reset button, but it does it in continuity with the rest of the films. So it's not, and you can get away with that with a time travel movie that you can't do with, you know, say, remaking Bringing Up Baby or, you know, The Wizard of Oz. It's not something that you can just set it within the story chronology of everything else. If it's a reboot, you know, like RoboCop, you know, something like that, you're just making it up all over again. And what's the point?
Yeah, we're seeing that based on the idea of, like, you know, capitalize on, like we talked about, a risk-taking, you know, is that they see something that they knew had some financial success at some point in the past and has a strong, you know, fan base that continues, you know, which you are surprised when you think of, like, Star Wars. You know, granted, it's a much bigger thing, global, international in that process, but think of, like, Dredd, for example. Like, you know, Dredd was critically, you know, successful among the fan base, but not financially.
Right. And you're talking about the second version of that,
yeah.
Not the Stallone version. Correct. You're talking about the one with Carl Urban.
Exactly.
Which, yeah, people still want to see a sequel out of that.
And these guys won't take the chance, you know, because for whatever reason, they don't see the track record, you know, and they don't believe it can do it.
You know where a second Dredd would show up?
Probably video on
Netflix.
Demand. Yeah. Or Netflix, true.
Netflix could do, because they've just dived into that. They've got this new movie that's based on the book about General McChrystal in Afghanistan that Brad Pitt is going to be producing and starring in. And it's turned into a satire, but it's a very niche movie that nobody is going to, you know, the broad general audience is probably not going to go see it. But if they put it on Netflix, they spent, you know, I think $30 million to $300 million. I can't remember the number of it. But basically, it's going to get a first run. Not in the movie theaters, but it's going to Netflix first.
That's where the creativity is going, into Netflix and all these other niches.
It definitely feels like it.
Yeah, because it was something what Dan was saying. It's like, it's got to be back in Hollywood. You know, who's running Hollywood? It's producers and executives.
Accountants.
They want to see where the money is. And they're the ones that are killing the creativity.
How can we sell the toys?
It's not that there's no creativity. It's they're killing it. Mm-hmm. They are killing it.
It's not even necessarily killing or suppressing. It's that they're trying to go where they think the dollar already exists.
Yes.
You know, Tron 3 notwithstanding, you know.
Right. Well, and that goes back to what Paul Dini was talking about on Kevin Smith's blog, where, you know, he talks about how Tower Prep died and how Young Justice died and the animated Green Lantern and all of these others, because the wrong people are watching the show, which... Okay, that's completely separate new thing. You know, girls can't watch, whatever. And it flows from one to the other, because so many girls and families were watching these shows, not enough boys were watching the shows, they weren't buying the toys. And so you have this A to B to C where the creativity is... impacted and very heavily influenced by the marketing aspects of, you know, whatever merchandise they want to do.
What will they buy if they see this?
Yeah, it was just like Batman and Robin. You know, Joel Schumacher says the studio kept coming down to him because Warner Brothers Consumer Products kept saying, "Throw this in and put this in and put this in and put this in," because we want to sell the toys. And that's what that movie ended up being, is a giant toy commercial, and everybody product that's placement. Part of that movie. Yeah, they've all said, this is a pile of crap. And we know it is, but what are you going to do?
And you see, Disney has the Marvel movies, and they're saying they're not going to make a Black Widow movie because they don't think boys would go see the movie. And they need a boy fan base. They need a market for boys. And that's why they're not making the Black Widow movie, because they already has a girl market.
I'll be first in line.
You're looking at when they say, well, they're not selling the right merchandise, we'll kill it, instead of saying, who's watching, let's sell them merchandise.
Well, and part of that...
That's the mentality that we're getting out of these executives.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of that is, and having been on that side of it where you're determining your marketing strategy and you're designing advertising material and all of that, you have to figure out who your market is. And, you know, we've heard from the beginning that one of the reasons why Disney went after Marvel and Lucasfilm was to attract the boy market, the male audience demographic, because they do have it locked up with the girls, with the princesses, and, you know, Mulan and Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast and all of that. So from a demographic standpoint, in terms of the advertising dollars and the merchandising, sure, I can understand why Disney would say, we bought Marvel to get the boys to buy our stuff. Because the boys aren't going to buy the princess stuff, you know? They're not.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. now Princess Leia is a Disney princess. Maybe they'll buy an occasional thing or two. But their strategy, and you have to think, it's Disney. They've got to know a little bit about what they're doing. They've got to have some numbers to back this up. That, yes, a Black Widow movie might sell, but if you look at all of the merchandise, you know, people griping about Black Widow not being on that, you know, all of the shirts and the, you know, lunchboxes and whatever else, the only characters that show up in all of the Avengers stuff, you know, consistently are the ones with powers. It's not just Black Widow that gets left out. Hawkeye gets left out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nick Fury is not on everything. Maria Hill is nowhere to be found. So it's not just Black Widow. She just happens to be the most prominent one because it's Scarlett Johansson, and she's sexy, and she's badass, and she's Black Widow. And we want to know that story because we've gotten enough hints from her appearances in the movies so far. We want to know what happened in Budapest. Mm-hmm. You know, we do get that because she's an interesting character. Disney doesn't see it that way. Disney is going to look at it from a numbers standpoint, what sells. And in that overall viewpoint, you know, Black Widow is not a Disney princess. That's one of the reasons why I think we've taken so long to get a Captain Marvel movie, you know, Carol Danvers' Captain Marvel, or even any more progress. You know, you see all this, you know, we want Widow hashtag and all of that. But a very vocal minority online and social media does not necessarily mean that the marketplace is going to support XYZ product or story or movie or whatever else. I personally think Black Widow would work better as a Netflix series, not a movie.
I think that they're missing an opportunity.
Give her 8 episodes on Netflix and go from there. They are missing an opportunity.
Because, you know, I mean, she was a very interesting character. I mean, irregardless, you know, in addition to the fact that Scarlett is just an amazing actress in general and she brings a lot to all of her roles, I think that people were intrigued with the character from the beginning when they saw her in, was Avengers the very first?
Iron Man 2.
Yeah, Iron Man 2, yeah, she showed say, up yeah. briefly, but I think she really started to get defined, especially with her interactions with Hulk, like in Avengers. But then when she entered into Captain America, she was the glue that held that film together. I mean, yeah, right. It was a really good and well-acted kind of sci-fi kind of, you know, 70s thriller kind of format. But to me, immediately, I saw the opportunity that why don't they actually take her and follow a Marvel format like the old team-up comics? She could be the headliner, and she could pull all those B-string heroes in and tell stories along her path.
Right.
Because she clearly has a huge history, you know, like in the Marvel Universe, and she's traveled around different points. I mean, you can find covers of the books, you know, over the years where she's always coming in, like when Ghost Rider and Wolverine were all just guest starring. Same thing with Widow. You know, she's glue. She's great.
Well, and she's also got, you know, the history with Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've got all of this backstory with the Red Room and her background in ballet and all of these different things, which we've touched on a little bit now in Agent Carter. Yeah. So there is that thread that keeps going through all of the different Marvel things that have that connection to Black Widow as a character.
It's a great setup for anybody that wants to take
it. It is.
Yeah. But,
and I think that a lot of us were surprised that we didn't get an announcement about Black Widow after Lucy. Because Lucy proved that Scarlett Johansson can do an action movie, can carry the action movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think now maybe Disney is taking a look and see what Jessica Jones will do on Netflix. If they're smart. See, here's the thing, and I've said this before. If Wonder Woman fails for DC, there will not be anything past Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel will be the last female lead superhero movie that we get. Because Marvel will look at DC's Wonder Woman and they'll look at the numbers and they'll take completely the wrong message from it. And they'll say, women, females, because that's what they're doing now. Perlmutter has already got it in his head that women-led, you know, female-lead superhero movies don't work because Halle Berry and Catwoman didn't work. Well, of course, it was crap.
Terrible story.
That's your example?
That one, Supergirl with Helen Slater. Again, terrible story. Helen Slater did a great job with what she had.
You know, all movies like that are, you know, are a combination, obviously, in their collaboration. And if you think of, you look at the Lucy example, that's also Luc Besson, you know. And mm-hmm. Luc Besson is notable for writing very strong female character-driven stories. You know, Fifth Element, Nikita, The Professional. I mean, you pair him, you know, with honestly any female, and he's going to make a compelling film. So
I think it would be interesting to see him do a Black Widow movie.
Absolutely.
Or even, you know, let him direct Captain Marvel.
There you go.
But, you know, if it's a female lead, you know, the politics of the day are it has to have a woman director. Because, I don't know, estrogen? What? I mean, you know, I'm gonna get pulled out just for saying something like that. Because I'm privileged white male.
If Wonder Woman fails, but Captain Marvel does well, do you think that they'll maybe wise up and say, maybe DC will get the heads up and say, well, maybe we shouldn't go so dark, and maybe Marvel wise up and say,
DC won't figure it out.
Maybe DC just did a bad job with it.
Yeah. Now, I think if Wonder Woman fails, they get Captain Marvel, and she gets a solo film, and then she becomes part of Avengers Infinity, and that's it. That's where she goes.
What is that movie?
Unless it's highly successful, though.
I never watched them, but it came out, and she was pretty successful. The Underworld, what?
Kate Beckinsale.
There you go. What is that?
Werewolves and vampires.
Okay, so it's more fantasy, not so much.
It's supernatural stuff.
She carried that. I mean, it did well.
Yeah, they're making a fifth one. She's back for it.
I mean,
of course, it helps that her husband is the director.
Okay.
You know, hey, let's go make a movie. Yeah, you know, it's, you wake up one day, you're having breakfast. Hey, honey, you want to get in the cat suit again?
It's the same thing.
Yeah, sure.
With,
you know, we need to pay off the car. Let's go make another one.
Same thing with Mila. You know,
that's true. Yeah, Mila Jovovich.
I mean, I think it's been on and off again, but I mean, I think she's still currently with Paul Wess.
I think so.
So that's the only that's yeah. it has to yeah. be your husband directing in order to be successful,
right? Matt, that's how it works. I don't know. But in this day and age, I think it's understandable that there's so much focus on dollar performance, because, you know, as much as we sit here and talk about story, it is a business first. And if the business model doesn't sustain whatever you're trying to do, you know, and Kendall, you know, we talk about on Rogues Gallery, Kendall doesn't think that we've got probably another 2 years maybe before the superhero movie bubble bursts.
I would agree.
You know, Tim thinks 10. Jeff was talking 4 to 6, maybe. Well, no, Jeff said 10. Tim said 4 to 6. Kendall's given it 2.
I would say 2 to 3 because the Twitter jokes have already started.
Yeah. Well,
right? When the Twitter jokes start happening, it's going to die fast.
Is it a meme yet?
It's also really going to depend on financial success. I mean, you know, I would agree definitely that we're getting on shaky ground and everybody's nervous about Ant-Man, you know, and where that will go. But I think there's excitement building for Civil War next year.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it could be cyclical. And also we got to factor in that DC is just now entering into their shared universe production schedule. So we get Batman V next year. And then from then on, there's a huge slate equally with them. So,
right.
I mean, you know, I would certainly want to say 2 to 3. But I think it's going to just depend on box office. You know, the fans may get reinvigorated if they tell a good story.
Two to three good years, and maybe forced upon us for about one more.
When you look at it, it's box office altogether. But you look at, like, video games. You look at the Atari 2600 was absolutely doing killer job on the entire. They dominated the market until they started getting some really bad games into the market, and it ruined. You know, the whole...
It was all E.T.'s fault.
Whole business. But then you look at the superhero genre, and as long as they're still turning out solid stories that people want to see, they're going to have big boom with that genre.
Right.
But as soon as they start turning out one or two crappy ones, you know, they, you know, the executives got their heads got too big for their, you know, ego. Oh, their egos got too big for them, and they start meddling in ways they shouldn't. They screw things up, and it shows up in the box office. That's going to be the end of the bubble.
Well, and I think too that, you know, you still got this notion of as long as the franchise is making money, Marvel, Transformers now becoming another shared universe thing. Star and Wars is
soon
back.
To be joined by Robin Hood.
What?
Yeah, there's what? News broke last week of a Robin Hood shared universe.
Oh, jeez.
How do you do that? There's not a universe for it to share.
Dan.
It's Robin Hood and his merry men and the Sheriff of Nottingham. There is no shared universe. There aren't any other characters to drop in.
Apparently not only just based on trends, it's been spurned on by the fact that there are a number of studios that are currently racing right now to get, including Legendary and others, to get these new reboots and stuff and recycles of Robin Hood out. Apparently there's like 3 or 4 studios that within the next 2 years are going to drop Robin Hood films and maybe build them into shared universes.
They already did that. Kevin Costner did one, and who was the other one? Was
Russell Crowe did.
Yeah.
He just did
and
one.
And those came out like within a year or two of each other, didn't they?
No,
it's like 10, 15 years between those movies.
Okay. But I know, well, because I know, because when we had talked...
Kevin Costner's was early 90s.
Yeah, it was like early 90s.
Because when
Russell Crowe
was like 2010.
Yeah, when Man of Steel came out, everybody was talking about the fact that both of Kal-El's dads were Robin Hood. And it was 1492. It was 1492. It was the Christopher Columbus stuff. There were two Christopher Columbus movies that came out within 6 months of each other.
Yeah.
Because I think Ridley Scott did one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who did the other one, but they were almost at the same time.
It was the whole time when Hollywood was going dark. Like every story they had to tell the dark story.
Grim dark.
The Christopher Columbus thing, I think, was more of the attempted sabotage thing that Hollywood likes to do. It's like almost like with Disney was doing a Bug's Life. Well, one of the former executives was now at DreamWorks, and so before Bug's Life came out, what came out? Ants.
Yeah.
Same thing with the movie Volcano. What came out just before that? Dante's Peak.
Yeah.
Well, you look at...
That was a sabotage thing.
You talk about sabotage. John Carter is a textbook example of how a studio killed its own movie. And that goes back to buying the franchise to get the boys. As John Carter is in production, you've got I think Alan Horn was in and Perlmutter and all those guys. They were negotiating to buy Marvel. As soon as they bought Marvel, they don't need John Carter anymore, because it goes back to the franchise. Even though John Carter is the most original of all of them, because it came first. You know, without John Carter, there is no Superman, there is no Buck Rogers, there is no Flash Gordon, there is no Luke Skywalker, none of it. There is nothing without John Carter. And Disney dropped it like a hot rock, because, you know, we've got Marvel now. And we have this whole gigantic universe thing.
Well, somebody else picked it up, so it's going to be fine.
Yeah, they just saw a huge basket of toys when they bought Marvel.
That's exactly what it was. And then when they bought Star Wars right after that, it was the same thing. Is, you know, we can do action figures.
Until they can figure out how to market Black Widow, it's just going to sit there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly what it is.
They need to figure out, they got to get somebody in there. Like, how are we going to sell this to the girls and to the boys?
Well, we got in, you know, in the factor of that, you know, we see industry reports on box offices and stuff and what they make globally, worldwide, domestic, all this stuff. But the costs, you know, I mean, they weigh these things well. You know, even with Tomorrowland, you know, you can call it a flop if you want, but I firmly believe that it's going to break even, you know, based eventually.
Eventually,
you know,
it will,
and that's still a good business model, you know, so it's not necessarily like they're losing their, you know, losing the house, like, on the deal. I think they just overinflate it, and since it didn't make $1 billion, which is its current benchmark, they just said, oh, that's a failure, so let's go and move on something
else. And I think the other thing, too, is that a lot of people are looking, they're comparing actual box office to projected box office, mm-hmm. and they're saying yeah. it didn't meet the mark, it failed. And then you combine that with the fact that most of the time you have a box office a disappointment, it's not a franchise picture. It's something like Tomorrowland or what's another one that didn't do well here recently?
I'm Lost in Space came to mind, but it's not recent.
Right.
It's been a while.
But that was a reboot. You know, yeah. that was something where, you know, we want to
get
the name recognition.
I would have liked to seen another one.
I would have liked to seen one that actually was a little bit more faithful to yeah. the show, to the beginning parts of the show, not the Doctor and the Robot show that came yeah. later, but the original premise of the show. And if you look at the unaired pilot, which not too many people have seen, it's a completely different show than what CBS actually put on the air. Mm-hmm. It was a lot darker. It was a lot more drama. It was a lot more of, you know, the danger part as opposed to danger, danger, Will Robbins. You know, there was an actual threat there. The fact that they were lost out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it was a result of this villain. Dr. Smith was the villain. He was the saboteur. He was not the comic foil.
Yeah, but that was an example since it didn't do the projected sales. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a pretty successful movie, but it just didn't do what it was supposed to do. The projected yep. sales, it just died.
Yeah, and nowadays you look at global box office factors into it a lot more than it used to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even more than domestic box office numbers nowadays anymore.
And what gets me is that
a lot of movies now are opening in Europe and Asia before they're opening in
right.
the U.S.
Yep.
And yeah. so we're getting their numbers before we ever go right. before we ever see it on the big screen.
And what I don't understand is they still do it the old way. The first weekend is it. It'll make or kill the movie. We're not like that anymore. You shouldn't go by the first weekend because there's so many outlets that this movie will continue on.
You have to yeah. factor in DVD sales.
Thank you.
Putting it on Netflix or online, stuff like yeah, that. They have how? To focus more on putting their movies online.
Well, yeah. and I think that's one of the things that they're looking at because the Burroughs estate, you know, now having the John Carter license back, they're looking at the long tail that it had in terms of home video, and a lot of people found that movie in DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah,
and you know, we missed it in the box office, and everybody went, "How did we miss
this?" They still do it. Or they still have that old yeah. mentality. It's yes. the first weekend. The first weekend it's out, that's it.
That's right.
It's well, a flop or it's a failure.
You can't really market DVD sales when you're trying to sell toys.
Right. Well, that's true.
That type of thing.
True.
It's basically, you try to market with a punch. All right, we did killer box office on opening weekend. Buy our toys.
Yeah. yeah. Well, and you look at the success of the first Star Wars movie. You know, after release date... George Lucas went to Hawaii. He's in Hawaii. He's spending time with his family. Spielberg and his family's out there. They're all out there just kind of relaxing and not over anything. Alan Ladd Jr. calls Lucas and says, "It's a hit. Star Wars is a hit. It's big. It's huge. It's doing box office, you know, as they say, boffo box office, right?" And Lucas, of course, is, well, it's the first weekend. Let's see what happens in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Yeah, and mm-hmm. he's always been the pessimist. And it's like you're talking about, Sonia, that mentality of, you know, for genre especially, first weekends are always pretty good, and then there's this real fast taper off of performance. And nowadays, the mix, and this is something I think people are still trying to figure out, is what is the mix that determines a success anymore? Because used to be, your movie would be in the theaters for how long? Six weeks, 8 weeks, 13 weeks, 2 months.
Yeah, running the cage in for 13.
And then it wouldn't come out on home video until another 10 or 12 months later.
Yeah, almost a year mm-hmm. later.
And now the window has
it's
really...
2 months. It's on HBO that. In 6 months sometimes.
Yeah, if that. So it's basically the movie theater is not even the point of success. It's just the commercial to get it into the home video.
And if it's not something that is, you know, it could be like, say, through, you know, Searchlight or something like that, one of the, you know, kind of independent elements of mm-hmm. a bigger studio.
Yep.
If it's not necessarily something they have put a huge marketing budget behind. Sometimes these days it's appearing on VOD, if not at the same time before.
Yeah.
We've had
day and date
seen trailers for a video on demand release that comes out before a theatrical debut.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why this deal with Netflix is such a big deal, because they just made a deal for a first run release of a what you would normally find in a theatrical film.
Netflix is hot right now. I mean, they are the creative space.
And they jumped on something.
They're penetrating other markets. You know, they're just getting made a deal to go into China. They're adding other countries that they're coming into. The deal with Marvel was a huge thing for them.
The neat thing with Netflix is they really don't have to bank on anything, because Netflix, they've funded some episodes of stuff and they've shared costs on the production. Mm-hmm. But if they can do like with this feature deal, they're ultimately, if it continues to grow like it sounds like it is, they can have effectively another company take the risks of the cost.
Yeah.
Netflix just sits there and collects subscription fees and airs the show.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I think they're ahead of the game compared to Amazon Studios in that regard, because Amazon wants to make their own stuff, you know, create their own content. And that's great. I would love to do the same thing here. But you're right. It does take a lot of money.
Amazon is kind of, they do have some really good content. They recently adapted a book for a detective story called Bosch.
Mm-hmm.
That is fantastic, but something I feel they're failing at is they're stuck in their model of that you have to buy Prime to get into their new television series. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a minimum $100 entry fee.
Well, and I don't ever see any marketing for any of the Amazon content.
Yeah, this is the first I've heard of it.
If you don't have Amazon Prime, or if you don't have an Amazon account, you don't get an email that says, hey, we're working on XYZ. I get an email every now and then from Amazon saying, we have these pilot episodes. Mm-hmm. Go watch them and see what you like and tell us what you like and what you don't like. But, by the way, you have to have Prime.
Yeah, they're in their third season right now of show development. They've actually had one show called Transparent that's won Emmy Awards already.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's also going to be a game changer.
But yet, not many people know that it's there because it's
But Netflix hidden. And Amazon and those kind of places, in terms of the outlet for creativity, I think that Dan's right. I think Hollywood is probably going to be one of those places where you don't even look there anymore for the original stuff as much. They're still going to be making original pieces. They're just still going to be making original content. But from a money standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, if it's not a franchise, it's not going to go. Unless you put it in some, like what you said, like you know, Warner Brothers sends something to New Line, or Sony puts something into Columbia Pictures, or some, you know, the lower tier production houses get some of the more froofy titles that aren't part of a big shared universe.
Things that they can produce for, you know, less than $10 million.
Yeah.
Well, when you see like movie stars doing more television shows too. So the market on Netflix is you can binge watch a TV show in a weekend, and that's what people want to do. And I think big name movie stars know that, and they're starting to see that. And so, you know, Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, they did True Detective on HBO, and it was great.
And House of Cards.
House of Cards.
I was amazed that Kevin Spacey went to Netflix. I was like, whoa, he's a big actor.
Well, and Kevin Bacon in, what was that one that was on Fox here for a couple of seasons?
The Following.
Yeah. See, and those kind of things, and that's one of the reasons why people think that a Black Widow Netflix series would work, because if you only do a six-hour thing or a 10-hour thing, there's your commitment, and there you go. And she's done. And then she can go off and do whatever else that she's doing, family or other movies or, you know, Captain America, whatever. And the marketing for a Netflix series is not as, the press junkets and everything else is not as grueling as it is for a Marvel movie. I mean, you're spending 2 months promoting a film that you just spent 3 months making. I mean, that's a half of your year.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and then you see, you know, a Black Widow TV show might be great because you can go deeper into the character because you have more screen time.
Yeah,
but with a movie, if you want to make another movie, you have to make another movie. But with a television show, you have it planned out. You have the 10 episodes.
Exactly.
Continue.
Yeah, because with Black Widow, you could do, you know, two or three episodes on the Red Room, and you know, maybe three episodes, maybe with Winter Soldier and what happened in Iran or Iraq or wherever it was they were. You know, this, give me two episodes in Budapest, and have Jeremy Renner come in as a guest star, and we get that flash of whatever happened between them there, because up until Budapest, up until Hawkeye got involved with Black Widow, she was a bad guy. She was the villain. She's working for the Russians. She's an assassin working for the bad guys. That is that's a whole nother type of conversation, type of story that you can tell, because you're not going to make a Black Widow movie and have her be the villain, because people aren't going to go watch that. But if you do a 10-hour film, basically a 10-hour movie on Netflix, you can let her be the villain, put her on the redemption arc, then Budapest happens, Hawkeye doesn't kill her, he recruits her instead, and then you spend the rest of the movie doing whatever to get her up to S.H.I.E.L.D. where we find her in the films. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. All right, with that, we're going to take a break, we're going to refill coffee mugs, and then when we come back, we'll talk about something when Echo Chamber continues here on Sci-Fi From Your Radio. Stand by.
Our transmitters are made from hand wavium. This is Sci-Fi From Your Radio.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi From Your Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi From Your Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi For Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out. Sci-Fi For Me Radio and Sci-Fi For Me TV. All part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Hi folks, my name is Timothy Hardy, and I am one of the co-hosts of H2O, the weekly show about everything genre that I host with Mr. Jason Hunt, and we talk about pretty much anything you need to hear about or want to hear about or didn't know you needed to hear about in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, horror, science fiction, all these great things that we cover every week. And it is just a opportunity for you to tune in and listen to some really, really fun stuff. H2O, scififorme.com. We'd love to have you listen.
But that movie kind of traumatized me. Like, I was underneath
a
the
little,
seat.
I was going to say, you're eight. Yikes.
I was under the seat for most of the film. Like, you know, but, you know, it's...
But she wasn't about to walk out because she paid.
But technically, you know, like, I was nine. So, I mean, I was at an age where I understood to be quiet in the film. Yes. And I couldn't understand some of the concepts.
You weren't disturbing others.
It was just a really scary movie.
Yeah. And Alien is actually a good example of a movie that's taking familiar tropes and doing something original with it, something creative, and then it turns into a franchise. Sequels, bum, bum, bum.
The evil franchise.
Yes. I heard a really good term the other day on another podcast where the guy was talking about that comics, what to call them, and they called it a requel.
A requel, yes. Okay, there we go. Because they are now talking about Alien 5 with Sigourney Weaver. And, you know, and we've heard that Michael Biehn's going to be back as well. Nobody yet has confirmed whether or not Carrie Henn is going to be back as Newt. But
I think,
you know,
Biehn should show up, like, in the film for, like, the first, like, 5 minutes, like a...
They kill him off.
...desiccated corpse in this corner, and he just falls over and crumbles.
Welcome back,
aliens,
everyone.
Aliens must pop out of people's chest in this one again.
Yes, and not merge with the dog. We'll just get it right this time. Welcome back, everyone. This edition of Echo Chamber, Jason Hunt here, along with Senator Rick. See?
Me.
Yes, you. Sonia Rodriguez is here. Chris Jensen is here. Yeah. Allie Ulrich is here, all in the studio. That's your cue.
Yes, hello.
Okay. And joining us by Google, Dan Handley.
Hello.
And we are talking
See,
about...
I got my cue.
but yeah, there have been times... Of course, there have been times I've missed my own cue, too. So, you know, it's just, it depends on how much coffee I've got in me. We are talking about the death of creativity. Well, the question of whether or not creativity is dead in Hollywood. I would say it's probably not, but it's on life
support. I think it's just kind of like it's moved.
Yes, that's exactly.
It was in the high rent district for a while, and now it decided basically that it's growing up a family.
Down in Soho.
It needs to move into something more sensible.
Yeah, a little brownstone on the corner. Yeah, right. Well, and I think, you know, for the longest time, we have sat and talked about the fact that the market is still trying to figure out the web. When you've got things like YouTube and Vimeo and now Vevo and all of these, you know, all of these online networks like Machinima that are basically changing the game in a way that people still have not figured out how to monetize. And that's one of the things that everybody keeps going back to is how do you make money doing it? Which, yes, it's understandable. It's a business. But at the same time, it's a consumer-driven thing. It's, you know, YouTube is very much the consumers. Hulu, Netflix. You know, one of the things we look at with Netflix throwing so much money into a project like Daredevil, they know that the audience will be there. I had to get a subscription to Netflix so I could watch Daredevil.
Yep.
And I didn't want to do that because it's money. But, you know, now, you know, since one of the things that we do here is we cover the Marvel 7th genre, and this is our job, and, you know, granted, we don't get paid for it yet.
How can you not want Netflix?
Yeah, well, really.
I'll give you the magic formula for getting my money.
Because I spend all my time in front of my computer working. Mm. I don't watch TV. I don't watch movies. I don't go out much.
So
I
know what you need is your computer and then Netflix your until, Netflix right there.
Yeah.
Dan, what were we going to say?
Yeah, I didn't want Netflix myself until, you know, I needed to catch up on Doctor Who. And then there was also, I was not privileged to watch the old, when Firefly was first on. It was on Netflix.
Yeah.
I had to watch it.
You and your white privilege.
I was the population that killed Blockbuster. I have been part of Netflix since the mail order.
Yep.
As soon as that came out, where you could get videos, and so I didn't have to get in my car and go anywhere. I could just go to my mailbox. Boom. Sold me.
Yep.
I'm not leaving the house.
And what killed Blockbuster for that is that they didn't adapt.
Right. Yeah.
They didn't adapt. And I think that's one of the things that we're seeing in Hollywood. They're not adapting.
They started to play their main downfall at the very end.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, they did. And it was like, nope.
Their primary downfall was streaming. You know, they did, like you say, Dan, go, you know, late to bring in the DVD by mail.
Right.
And it was doing okay, but prices were a little bit different, more restrictive. But their failure was streaming, because at that time, what defined Netflix's success was the fact that was the next evolution of now I don't even have to go to my mailbox.
Yeah, I can watch on my computer. And then
going to the mailbox was too hard.
Exactly.
And then you had the connection that allowed you to stream on your TV.
Now I have Netflix on my TV.
Yeah, you can go through the
Wii. I have it on my mobiles. I have it on my TV. I love
Xbox and PlayStation.
smart ass devices.
Yes. Well, and that's going to be another game changer too, because, you know, you see shows like Powers on the PlayStation Network. They're developing, Sony's developing original content, and
it's horrible content.
Powers is not horrible.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's your opinion. You can say that. See, but you don't like Stitchers either.
No, I grew to look it. I watched it a second time, and I do appreciate Stitchers now.
Yeah.
Mm.
Powers, I will never appreciate.
See, I watched the pilot of Powers, and I think that there's a little bit to it that could be better. I think one of the things that bothers me is so much of the foul language, and I'm like, okay, I can't watch this with my kid. I can't watch Daredevil with my kid.
That was what threw me off.
Yeah, but...
when you start constructing sentences out of expletives, then you've lost it.
But how much of that is in the book?
I don't know. I haven't read it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
the book. I'm told it's a pretty faithful adaptation of the book. So, okay. You know, that's there.
That's fair.
But, okay... It's not my cup of tea. I'm not the audience for it. But you look at the channel, And yes, Xbox has pulled away from doing all that. So the Halo movie is going somewhere else, or the series, or whatever it is it ends up being, is going to have to find another distribution outlet, because Xbox looked at everything and they went,
nah.
Oh, there's no way that we're going to win on this.
Was the Xbox thing at all connected to the Machinima Halo?
Yeah.
Did they? Was that kind of like spawned from that?
Yes. That came out of Xbox sitting there saying, there's no way we're going to win. There's no way we're going to make any money off of this because we're so far behind everybody else. And Xbox already, just coming out of the gate, had a bad reputation because the new Xbox One wasn't a video game console. You know, Xbox was supposed to be for video games. And then they came out with this Xbox One entertainment thing for playing and streaming. And it was like, wait a minute, what about our video games? And just coming out of the gate.
Entertainment console.
Exactly. And everybody just kind of went, well, that's not an Xbox. And then, you know, PlayStation 4. What was that old, you know, Home Improvement?
It's like, oh, hey, Xbox. It's only $700. Yay.
Yeah. So, you know, and the price point killed it, too. So I think that they looked at it and they went, original content is going to go someplace else. You know, you find different distribution. And the web continues to confound people in terms of making money. You can't make money on the web. You can use the web to market your product, your show, your movie, or whatever. But you're not going to make money with web as your primary distribution channel. You're just not gonna, because nobody's figured out how yet. In all of the, how long have we had the internet now? Since the late 80s? And
late 90s.
Internet, 1983. World Wide Web, 1992.
Okay.
So both. We're both right.
There you go.
See, I like it when we're both right.
Well, I mean, they're making money. I mean, it's just that not from the standpoint per se of, I guess you would say from a TV, but I mean, everything's all about advertising ultimately. I mean,
yeah.
If they can get advertising in front of you, they can get advertising dollars. But I mean, if you're talking about, in a sense, like box office stuff, I mean, all the internet sort of changed was becoming a computer-based VOD. You know, it's like, or I shouldn't say VOD, but pay-per-view.
Yeah.
You know, it's like pay-per-view was around all the time on HBO and things like that. And now it's just transitioned. I use a website called Cinema Now. Same thing, but it's, you know, it's non-subscription, but I just go to it, and when movies come out on the release date, new big movies, high definition, I can pay, you know, rent them for $6 for 48 hours, and I watch the latest releases, you know. Yeah. I think people are making money. I just don't think they're making it exactly as the old models did. And so
they're not making as much.
Right.
Well, in Hollywood, you never make any money anyway.
Right.
You know, if you use Hollywood accounting techniques, I should do that here.
Well, technically, we're talking about what was the old model with a Blockbuster, just readapted for the web.
Yeah.
So, and Blockbuster did try to adapt, but it was close to the end, and it was a little too late.
Well, and you get something like Geek and Sundry. You know, you talk about shows that are actually making money or something like that. Geek and Sundry ended up going with a Microsoft sponsorship.
Yeah.
You know, and sponsorships are probably the way to go on something like that, whereas, you know, if you just generate a brand new series, let's say Star Trek Continues, if it was not a fan film, if it was something original, then you still have, you know, the fact that everybody is just donating their time. But, you know, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, all of the crowdfunding stuff only goes so far. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the advertising backers, if you don't have the sponsorship dollars, then you're not going to succeed if web is your only distribution. I think that's one of the things that the studios are running into, where you have the first run in the theater, and the windows have gotten so much tighter and closer together because home video, in whatever way, shape, or form it takes, whether it's Blu-ray or DVD or download,
it's a package now. You can get the movie and be able to stream it too.
Yeah, yeah. You can get the ultraviolet version, and your DVD and your Blu-ray are all there in a combo pack. But I think that's where they figured out that's where the money is, outside of the merchandise.
I think that
that's all George Lucas's fault, by the way.
As everyone is, you know, chasing the creativity and trying to find out where it is, that you know, as nasty of a word as it's becoming, you know, crowdfunding in its infancy still has had a few successful proofs that if the content is desired, like if there is a fan base already existing for it, it's proven that they can effectively advance sell something. You know, like you talked about Geek and Sundry, and they did have Microsoft sponsorship to begin with.
Right.
But now they've kind of moved to, they're trying to independence. And one of the channels by Will Wheaton, where he does tabletop on the games,
mm-hmm.
You know, just last year, he raised over $1 million on Kickstarter, to not only fund the next season of tabletop, which was a, you know, huge success, but based on the stretch goals and going over $1 million, he created another show, which actually just debuted last week. It's a role-playing based, I can't think of what it's called now, like something Volcana, but...
Will Wheaton's new show is called Titan's Grave, mm-hmm. The Ashes of Volcana.
Now, is that airing? Is that going to be on Geek and Sundry as yeah. well?
It's going to debut on Geek and Sundry early for those that
Geek
are
GeekandSundry.com, yep.
friends. And then it'll also show on YouTube that Friday, the following Friday, wow. each week.
Now, is this a spinoff of the first show? Or is it a independent show?
It's the same overall premise with Wheaton's show, Tabletop, where he's going over, you know, tabletop gameplay.
Oh, okay.
But now he's moving into tabletop role playing, so he's actually going to explore that and see if it works. You know, it's a hard thing to capture, like in a variety type show. You know, because you're just,
unless you're on Twitch.
Yeah, true. Twitch has dominated a lot of those. I don't know how successful they are, but there are a lot of feeds for sure.
See, and that's another thing is where, you know, how do you recreate the market for that kind of thing. If I'm making a movie,
mm-hmm.
and at some point, are we going to end up going into a live component for all of this stuff in order to attract an audience? You know, your live Q&As or your live commentary, and you know, maybe at some point we get the license to all of the Star Trek films, and we do a marathon, and we do a live commentary on Twitch.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
hey, that's an idea. Let's write that down. Let's do that.
Yeah, that's definitely, like, I think a good market. I mean, Twitch certainly has the live streaming. You know, a lot of people are making livings just playing video games.
See, and I don't understand that at all. Me that either. Is so beyond me. Where
I didn't think that I was going to like tabletop. You know, but if anybody else real, I mean, maybe. I mean, whoever did it, if they didn't have the charisma and the humor and the interplay that Wheaton does mm-hmm. in the process, I doubt tabletop would be successful. So it's ultimately about the host, you know, right. but, you know.
That's probably why Week in Review doesn't have a big audience yet. It's all about the host. Bloody amateur.
And we're all quiet. The ultimate no comment.
For once, I did not get blamed.
You're on that show too, Hanley.
but I was not blamed for the downfall. Mm. For a change.
It hasn't fallen down on the face yet.
We're actually growing subscribers. New subscribers every week.
Yeah, that's true.
It does.
You know, and that's something that I noticed is kind of a weird thing. We are getting more subscribers on our YouTube channel every week, and I think that's probably because of the fact that I sit there and go, subscribe. The intern's life depends on it.
Because people need to be told what to do.
It's all right. YouTube do it. Channels are always a slow boil at first.
Well, and that was a suggestion from Chris when he stepped in. He said, instead of making the polite suggestion, tell them to subscribe.
Throw the hammer down.
That's right. So we do, you know. And I think it's working. I don't know. We'll see. We mm-hmm. still.
It's not so much like an order. It's just a reminder.
Click the button below the video right there.
Click the button. Inflict
us on your enemies right now.
That's right. And speaking of inflicting us on enemies, we are joined very late in the program by Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
Who is not our enemy. I wouldn't want you as an enemy, sir.
That's right, you wouldn't. Because I'm kind of a pathetic supervillain. It's just like... You know,
pathetic supervillain.
Can you imagine what would ever happen if you and I had a falling out?
Well, let's see. You'd have some very curious podcasts because they'd be one-sided.
Well, H2O
would be like a really strange show.
Alternate weeks, my opinion, your opinion, and then we'd never see each other.
Cut them together.
There you go.
It's a lot of editing for...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Make Allie do it. That's right.
There we go. Hey! Yeah.
She likes it.
I'm gonna be the
finally, our chance to never look at each other again.
He's seen it as an opportunity. It's like, this is a great idea. We should have
it's
a
like, hey.
Well,
can we schedule that?
You know what we ought to do? Is we ought to do this
it's
massive
because professional
Uwe
wrestling. What's the deal?
No, we do an Uwe Boll. We do an Uwe Boll style.
There we go. Oh,
and yeah. we each record a YouTube rant against the other one.
Hey.
And we have this massive falling out, and we put it all over on YouTube, and you know nobody's going to watch. Really? But it would be fun to see.
Publicity stunt.
And then
they
do
it all the time.
Exactly.
In Hollywood.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to squeeze in a shameless plug for something I got coming up here. Next week is the Independent Filmmaker Coalition's of Kansas City's One Night Stand Film Competition, 10-hour film competition. And
those are brutal, by the way.
They are so much fun, but yes, they are brutal. I'm never editing one again. I did it 1 year and it about killed me. Yeah. But our friend Brian Boy, who is a regular reader of the site, I hear from him. He never comments or anything, but we know that he reads. And he and I have had for the last probably 5 years this very public feud when it comes to the One Night Stand,
mm-hmm.
where yep. it's like, I will crush you, and you know your film's going to suck, right? You know, and
healthy competition.
Exactly, which we don't really have this year because I'm the president of the IFC this year, and I'm not actually working on a film. I'm running the whole thing, so I don't get to play, although I'm going to play in some form. But several years ago, it was huge. It was very public. We had the Kansas City Film Fest. We were like yelling at each other across the bar. I mean, it was like this very public thing.
I think I remember that.
And he and I were just laughing because we knew it was fake. We knew we were just playing, but everyone else is going, oh my God. And 2 weeks before, no, it was less than that. It was almost a week before the actual competition. Mm-hmm. He walked up to me and went, can I be on your team? And I was like, "Why, yes, Brian. Yes, you can."
Say it louder.
And we won that year. It was the awesome team. But yeah, it's
you know, we're giving away the game book.
Yeah, well, you know.
We're giving
that's assuming that anybody's listening.
We have 30.
But yeah. No, it's there is a certain amount of fun. And you and I talked about this on H2O this week. The fact that there's how much of this is, you know, an act, how much of this is performance to get a point, to get
Uwe Boll, the performance artist.
Oh, God, yeah. Listen to H2O. We talk a lot about him.
Yeah.
And then we digress a lot because there's only so much you can say about, yeah, he sucks. Okay, moving on.
I watched a little bit with peak interest after his rant, you know, and checked out his Kickstarter just to see, like, I was thinking, could it work? Like, could he actually offend enough people to get the counter side of the argument to possibly fund him? And I think he still failed.
Oh, yeah.
Not that I wanted him to succeed. I was definitely on the other side.
Well, and this goes back to what we ever talked about earlier, the fact that the web stuff and Hulu and Netflix and crowdfunding and all of these different things, you know, how much they've impacted the game overall. You look at something like Veronica Mars, you know, being completely crowdfunded, and that's, you know, that's a Warner Brothers thing. That's Rob, you know, Rob Thomas comes together and you know, Kristen Bell and all these names come together to do this thing. Zach Braff has done a crowdfunding. And then you get somebody like Uwe Boll who tries to do it. And it does go back to the creativity side of things, the quality of the project. Is the project creative enough? Is it attractive enough from the standpoint of what kind of story is it telling? Is it going to be told well? Is the execution going to be good? Is this going to be something I want to watch, let alone put money into?
Well, you look at things like that where these people have built up an audience prior to doing this. They built up a sense of goodwill with the fans by creating something already that was entertaining and original and had, you know, wasn't a carbon copy of anything else.
But see, the Zach Braff thing was completely original.
Right.
It wasn't a franchise thing. It wasn't a sequel. It wasn't a reboot.
Right, but he himself had built up a certain amount of goodwill. And you have someone like Boll who just, he doesn't inspire that kind of love or care or interest. And even if he was making really, really amazing films, which he doesn't, but even if he was, his personality, I mean, you know, you're... he's not Milton Berle. I mean, if you're going to get insulted, or Rodney Dangerfield, you know, that kind of abrasive personality as an act, everybody knows it's an act. You look at someone like Bull and you listen to him talk and you're going, no, he's really horrible.
Yeah.
And you don't figure, do I want to give money to a horrible person who makes crappy movies?
And there's a point.
No, not really.
When it seemed like, you know, at least from my perspective, that potentially Bull could have ended up in your, you know, Ed Wood and Planet Nine or Plan Nine, for, you know, kind of your Panable type films. But it's like, because people hated him so much, but honestly, I don't even see people panning his films.
And, well, see, the problem is that you can't play drinking games with his stuff because you'll die.
Exactly.
So that's a future topic for an echo chamber. Is Uwe Boll the modern equivalent of Ed Wood?
No.
No.
They need to make an Uwe Boll version of the Ed Wood movie they made with Johnny Depp.
Oh God, no! No, and have
Michael Bay direct it.
Oh yes. Wow! Yes. Oh. See, I'm pretty sure that there'd be an implosion somewhere. Would it take Michael Bay with it?
No. Well, you know who could play Uwe Boll? Nicolas Cage.
Well, he does need the money
with Helena Bonham Carter.
Mm-hmm.
But I like her.
I like her too. It was funny until that point.
Yeah.
Oh sure, fine. Be that way.
Well, okay. See, unless Tim Burton directs it.
Oh god.
Well, yeah, that's true. She's not going to be in it if he's not.
The wife and husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go. I wanted to touch Jason on another, you know, like an angle that you were talking about earlier, was the, you know, baffling nature of the internet and of how to, you know, kind of extract money from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, as it continues to grow and change and evolve, that when I look at the way I spend money online, I don't think that necessarily they should be, Hollywood should be baffled by it. I think that it's an evolving, you know, medium. When you look at, you go back maybe to my childhood and what my parents would spend, you know, obviously there was box office dollars, video rentals, and, you know, like your HBO and your cable packages.
Right.
That's where the money went in.
Listen to him talk about his childhood in LA, right?
And that's when they got it.
They're so young.
And then they actually...
And when they leave the nest, it's so sad.
And when it evolved, to me, it has just evolved into a different... Obviously, the internet's a different medium now. So, like, but I pay, you know, I do Netflix, I do Hulu, you know, I do my video on demand. You know, occasionally I purchase a movie online. I do Netflix. So it's like the money is still being paid.
Yeah.
It's just I don't think that they recognize that it's there, you know, like, and they don't think that they're able to capitalize it. If they give me good content and good access to stuff, I'm going to pay for it. I mean.
Well, I think that.
There's also another aspect is we're talking about, you know, paying to see a movie online for like a 48-hour online rental, it's an old model. Well, a lot of companies have been using an old model of using the commercial breaks. You know, they've been doing that. Now, when you're going to an online thing where it's not just being blasted out to everybody, on one hand, your commercial is not going to reach as much many people. But on the other hand, it could be better targeted to the audience coming in. If they could figure out how to target it better, they can get more money from the advertiser. So it's more or less things are evolving. I think most of these people have their minds in an old model that they can't wrap their heads around the evolution.
Well, and there's also the fact that, and those of us who have worked for a movie theater or know anything about working for a movie theater knows that the theater themselves are paying the studio for, they're basically renting out the theater to the studio, except they're paying the studio. So until that model goes away, until the physical location that is actually paying for the right to show the big budget picture goes away, you're always going to have two entirely separate markets for the internet and physically the theaters. I mean, they're going to be and ne'er the twain are ever going to meet, because the model. I mean, there really isn't a way to translate those two models across each other.
I think with, like, you know, something like Blockbuster and stuff, and the physical location to rent a DVD or something or a movie, how that evolved and was absorbed by the internet, initially by Netflix, and now it's moving heavily towards just all streaming.
Sure.
I believe that cable TV is going to have the same thing. Like, we will see within, you know, maybe less than a decade, the absorption of cable into the internet itself.
I don't know. It's going to be so much of an absorption as more of a, the cable companies are going to look at the fact that it's going to ultimately be less expensive for them to become, because we're all going to be getting that stuff. I mean, cable is going to become the internet. Right. We're all exactly. The cable companies are going to hate it, but it's going to happen because we've all, you know, turn on your Google Fiber and ta-da, instant everything. So, you know, I could see it within a decade easily transitioning over. Now the networks are going to have are the ones who are going to have the real issue, because until broadcast goes away.
Yeah.
And as long as broadcast is free, it's not going to go away.
I think broadcast can become stream. I mean, broadcast is streaming. So,
the broadcasters are still in the mindset that they were in 30, 40, 50 years ago, where everything depends on the advertising dollars. And the advertising dollars depend on the Nielsen numbers. And the Nielsen numbers are not anywhere close to accurate anymore.
Right, and that's an aspect of them needing to change.
I got another Nielsen packet in the mail.
Did you really?
Yeah, I haven't had network television. My TV has not been hooked up to any sort of receiving ability aside from my DVD player since 2005.
When I was working in St. Joseph, Missouri, this is an hour north of Kansas City. It's Market 235. I mean, teeny tiny, little tiny.
Is it small? Market.
It's small.
Okay.
I was working for the ABC affiliate up there. Small.
Is it tiny?
Smaller than tiny. And we went through a workshop about the Nielsen numbers because, you know, the salespeople need to understand how these Nielsen numbers work.
Sure.
So we went through the whole thing, what, you know, how the books work. And this is back when you're doing your diaries and stuff. And, you know, this is mid-90s. So nothing really is going on online yet with all of this. And I remember the guy who was doing the workshop saying that, you know, everything Nielsen numbers and all of that stuff depends on how many people fill out the books. And you have to fill out the books and then send them in order for Nielsen to have it. And nowadays they've got the little boxes that'll do the counts and stuff that are attached to the TV. But you have to actually have it on and monitoring and all this. But there was one, it was the entire Nottoway County was one guy with a book. There was one Nielsen family in all of Nottoway County. And so all of Nottoway County, Missouri was watching the same shows.
Right.
Because there's one guy filling out a book.
He's the voice.
And that was it. And that,
I watch for all of you.
And that's when you realize how skewed the Nielsen numbers are, and
a lot of that is being superseded now with your cable, satellite, and, you know, that type of thing. I've got the DSL stuff here, but what it is they're getting the information from the boxes now, rather than having certain people tell them. They're getting a universal deal, and now we're talking about things going online. Some of these companies are already doing that, like AT&T. Google, you got Comcast with Xfinity, where you can watch it from anywhere when you log online.
Google's monitoring everything that you do, because Google does that.
But those Nielsen boxes, and like you say, the distribution of those is still shallow, and it's not reporting correctly. I mean, recently we had, you know, a long-standing franchise with Stargate, you know, and Stargate Universe came out and had mixed reviews, and it came out. It slowly grew into a potentially good show if it had gotten longer, you know, ratings. But it was ultimately killed, like many shows, including more currently Constantine, based on those Nielsen ratings. And they're not taking into a fact that on Hulu, like I watched Constantine solely through Hulu.
Well, they are seeing plus +7 numbers. And it's, for example, you've got something like Doctor Who, and it's a completely different thing when you look at British viewership versus American, because the British broadcast model is different. You have like three channels, and they're all the BBC.
Yeah.
But the measurement of the specific show, though,
yeah, you're looking at the, you know, the live versus the live plus, what was it, live plus three, live plus seven,
live plus three, live plus seven.
Yeah.
And so they're starting to do that here. So you're looking at the plus +7 numbers. In fact, one of the things with Constantine they were looking at was, we got to get the plus +7 numbers. We got to get the people who are picking it up. And until network transitions over and goes away from the live model at all, because people aren't watching live the way they used to either. Because you and I, when we were children,
back in the day.
Okay, you had things like the MASH finale.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. Everybody watched the MASH finale, or the day after, or the or the original V miniseries.
Yeah,
yes.
Those numbers were live numbers. You knew who was watching because there were no reruns.
Yeah. Right.
You didn't have plus anything. You were like on the day.
The modern day Nielsen equivalent would probably only be the Super Bowl. Or maybe the World Series or something like that.
Because I talked to Jason about this one time, that the only two shows that I watch live are The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones. And the only reason why I watch them live is so I can watch the tweeting that happens.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason.
Right. So unless you're doing, and the tweeting, the live tweeting thing does encourage people to watch things on the, because you're live tweeting a show that was aired a week ago, and now you're live tweeting it. Why are you doing that?
Right.
Because it just seems silly. But at the same time, people are binge watching too.
Yeah.
So once all this new stuff that has happened, you end up changing the way that we're counting eyes on something. And as long as Nielsen sticks to the old model, which is a network model for 25 years ago, their numbers are always going to be skewed.
Probably older than that.
Well, but I mean, I think 25 years ago was the last time it was really valid.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, and to go back to your Doctor Who example, if you look at, a lot of people say, well, Doctor Who's not as popular now because the numbers aren't as good. They're comparing the live numbers versus the live numbers, whereas, yes, live numbers are down, but live plus 3, live plus 7 are up.
Right.
And so it's kind of a wash at this point.
Well, it's still
performing as well as it always has since it's come back.
Well, and more so because it has worldwide numbers now
that
aren't included in their Live Plus 7 numbers, because the BBC only runs off their own numbers. They don't run off worldwide numbers.
Yeah, they're not counting BBC America.
They know what those numbers are, and those numbers are huge. But you also look back at the original run of that show, and you had the UK. And then maybe you had Australia towards the end. I think Australia was broadcasting in the same 24-hour period, I believe. I could be wrong. And I think Canada caught some of that, too. But for the most part, it was UK numbers, period. And also, you also have to factor in that Doctor Who ran through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, at which point you didn't even have ITV or any of the other later British cable companies. You had BBC. If all you had on was the BBC, everybody watched the BBC. I mean, so your numbers are skewed then, too.
Everything was off. Yeah.
So it's like watching ABC, NBC, or CBS. We all did it through the early part, up to the early part of the 80s. Yep. And then all of a sudden, cable vision?
And
I think that's another
aspect of this where the creativity of a project makes a big difference. Because there's so much segmentation, there's so many different ways that you can get a show. There's so many different channels that have content. Whatever we can't even call it a show anymore. It's all content, because it could be a 5-minute thing, it could be a 30-minute thing. It's 13 hours of something, or you can't even classify it one way or another because everybody talks about Daredevil. It's a 13-hour series, but everybody the people that are involved are talking about it as a 13-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't even say it's a show, it's a series, because you're not watching it one episode at a time anymore. You're doing the binge watch and those kind of things. So even our consumption of the content is such that if the show is not creative enough, it's not going to survive, no matter how you're consuming it. And I think that Hollywood is sitting there thinking, okay, there's all of this other places where people are going to watch or stream or whatever. There's where you can experiment with the stuff that's either creative or not. In the theater, we have to have a sure thing.
Sure.
Franchise.
Well, think about sequel. It. Well, think about it, because you've got all these different avenues, you can target your niche market. You can target who you want to watch the show.
Which is what Netflix is going to do with the new Brad Pitt movie.
Okay, yeah. So you can sit there and say, we're going after this audience. Whereas a network or a big movie studio, they are trying to get as many butts in the seat as they possibly can because that's how they make their money back. But if you're 13 episodes of Daredevil, you're 8 episodes of True Detective, or you're 13 episodes of Penny Dreadful or whatever it is, you're looking at a very... You can target a tiny, tiny audience, relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. You know, hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions. But you're still targeting a smaller, smaller niche as opposed to, say, Jurassic World. You want everybody to go watch that movie.
Right.
You want Transformers...
And then go buy the toys.
Transformers 20. You want everybody to go watch that movie, even though it's not going to happen. No. But
you get into what Michael Bay does in order to get... for him to stay in business, and that is he goes after titles and properties that he's already got a base for.
Sure.
He puts some cool graphics to it, and he does everything else half-assed, and he gets away with it.
Yep. And speaking of Transformers, that's actually a good spot for us to do a little bit of a transition here. Speaking of Transformers, our next episode, we are going to talk about the growth of the shared universe. I know we've talked about it a little bit over on H2O, but we're going to talk a little bit more because now we've got, Star Wars is back, Marvel. You know, we've talked about Marvel starting to see a little stretch marks. Transformers is now going to become a shared universe. We got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Bumblebee is going to show up in the Ninja Turtles movie. Yeah,
Universal Monsters.
The Universal Monsters. And, you know, so next episode... At some point, whenever we decide we're going to record it, we will talk shared universes. And in the meantime, if you want to leave us a comment on whether or not you think Hollywood is dead, it's creative, it's dead to me, you can leave us a comment or send us an email, echochamber at scififorme.com. I almost said echochamber at H2O.
You almost did?
I almost did. Echochamber at scififorme.com. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, Hulu.
Not yet.
Let me try that again. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, Tumblr.
There you go.
Pinterest.
There you go.
Is that it? I think that's it. Yeah. Okay. All right.
The medias.
Also, our H2O podcast is syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine, yeah. So that's another place you can find us. And, of course, you can download us on iTunes and whatever app you use if you're on an Android device. And our latest headlines, we post content pretty much every day over at scififorme.com. And that's going to do it for us. This time we're going to wrap it up. Dan Handley, thanks very much for joining us, sir.
Yeah, absolutely.
And here in the studio, Allie Ulrich.
Thank you.
Sonia Rodriguez.
Bye-bye.
Chris Jensen.
Thanks.
Tim Harvey.
Goodbye.
For everyone here at scififorme.com, I'm Jason Hunt. Thanks very much for listening. Share it with your friends, and we will be back soon.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.